Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good afternoon on this Friday afternoon. How are you? The summer's definitely gone now, huh? And the West and the Northwest are getting the best weather. And we're going Northwest right away. We're going live to Donegal. Because on Monday, we first spoke with Eamon Keaveney. He was in Charleville in Cork at that point. He was one-wheeling, as in unicycling, his way up the country from Mizzen, the most southerly point, to Mallon, the most northerly point. And he was on a unicycle, yes, with a 36-inch wheel. All this week, he's been attempting to break the world record, all in aid of the Simon community. And let's go straight over to Eamon, see how he got on. Hello, Eamon.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Not too bad. I was expecting wind. Rain.
It's actually. I heard it's terrible down in Dublin, but it's actually quite a calm and dry day up here. Thank God.
Where is up here? Did you make it?
I made it there. It was 29 minutes past two, I think, just gone, and made it over the finish line at Banbridge Crown, Madeline Head. I'm looking out over the ocean, and there's nothing in front of me except a few little stumps and rocks, and that.
Yay! Yes, thank you. I had that crowd for something else, so I said I'd play it for you there as well. Congratulations! So just remind
thank
them
you
now.
Very much.
So you set off from Mizzen on Monday on your unicycle, 36-inch wheel, green, and yep. You're creating a record as opposed to breaking a record, isn't that it?
Yeah, so there was an unofficial record that wasn't verified. There was basically a technical issue with the rules and such. Mm. So the unofficial record was 5 days, 22 hours, 20 minutes. We've done it 5 days, 5 hours, 23 minutes.
You smashed it!
So
you smashed it!
Yeah, yes. Delighted, yeah.
I'm reckoning 17 hours off that unofficial record. So that's good going.
Not too bad.
Yeah, not too bad at all.
Myself.
Yes. A little birdie, Maeveen, your support crew,
yes.
Told us that at one stage you were close to giving up, were you?
I will say now, the last 3 days, we'd say, were pretty tough.
Nice.
There was a few, like, day four was an absolute washout. I don't know what it was like in the rest of the country, but I was going through Sligo, it was an absolute washout. It wasn't great, my knees were killing me. And then over the last couple of days, my ankle has swollen up to the size of an orange.
Right.
And today and yesterday, I don't mean to whinge, but I was kind of feeling every pedal stroke, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm delighted now that managed to push on. Thanks, you know, you get all the support, like people waving and beeping, people online, everyone donating online. We're over €4,000 now on the website.
Yeah.
And of course, Maeveen herself being there, she's... Yeah, people keep saying, oh, it's amazing what you've done, but like, there's two of us in it, we've achieved this together. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Maeveen, and she's absolutely amazing.
iDonate.ie, support one wheel, one way. That's how they find you, and it's all for Simon community. Here's the thing, which I'm going to put right in the next 12 months. I've never been to Mallon Head, I've been to Mizzen Head and most places in the country, but I've never made it to Mallon Head. So what's the last 50 miles or so as you get onto the Inishowen Peninsula? What's it like, the last bit?
I'd say it's lovely if you're driving, looking out the window. It's gorgeous, it's very nice. It's the best of Irish scenery, I'd say, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, and Donegal in general is absolutely stunning, but it's got that incredible West Coast charm, which means the fields, the mountains, and I sound like a tourist board spokesperson. But it is, it's absolutely gorgeous up here. You know, and just looking out at the waves now, absolutely stunning. You really should in the next time.
Yes, I will.
Up here.
And I didn't know you could do this, but I hear that you had to get out of the saddle in the final few miles. As in, you know, when you're going up the hill on a bicycle, you have to get out of the saddle and stand up.
Sometimes. Yeah. Well, I fell off, to be honest.
Oh, did you? Right. Well, that's really getting out of the saddle.
The last bit is just up to Mallon. It's like a true test of grit, I suppose. It was just the super steep bit. And I came off, and I'm allowed to, like, you know, come off the unicycle and get back on it.
Yes,
of course, everything.
Yeah,
that's
fine.
I was hoping to kind of make it in one stretch.
Right.
The legs did give out because, look, it felt near vertical, to be honest. But we made it, and I don't know, I'm pumped full of adrenaline now, to be honest.
Yeah, brilliant. Well done, Eamon Keaveney, creating a new unicycle record from Mizzen to Mallon. Too late for this year's Guinness Book of World Records, but we hope to see you in next year's edition.
Hopefully.
Yes.
All going well.
Well done, Eamon. Good luck. See you. Bye.
Thank
Have
you,
a great weekend.
Thank
you deserve
so much.
A rest. Bye, 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 bye. Whoa, whoa. Go, what's going on? Ladies and gentlemen, to whom it concerns, it's the Late Late Show, and here's your host, Patrick Kilty. Hello, hello. There you go. Yes, tonight's the night. You might have noticed the picture of a youngish man in all the newspapers today in his double-breasted jacket and his navy T-shirt. Yeah, tonight he takes over. So he'll be the fourth host of the longest-running chat show in the world, Patrick Kilty. I'd imagine he's a little bit nervous now. I was thinking, Kath Deely is his wife, right? And I'm wondering, has he sent her back the cuttings? Because, you know, the changing of the guard on a chat show in the UK doesn't warrant front page photographs in all the newspapers, like Irish Times. He was everywhere today, everywhere. She'd be going, oh, all right. Oh, yeah, there's something going on over there, okay? There's something going on across the Irish Sea. My hubby and father to my two children is, well, that's a big shoes to fill. That's a big gig, as they say in the business. And we wish Patrick Kilty well. And we're trying desperately to find out who's on the first show. And like back in the day, Gay Byrne never pre-announced, never promoed who was on. In fact, I remember going into the makeup department when I started here back in 1988, a long time ago, and the makeup artists would turn over the running order for the Late Late Show for fear that you'd see who was on. And that would be a Friday. And then, of course, over the years, they got into promoing it and you'd hear about it on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. They'd build up to it. And some people argue that that's the way to do it. Obviously now they've decided they're going back old school. So despite Niamh's best efforts, and she's good at this sort of thing, she's good at finding out if there's any whispers going on about anything, she will find out. She went over to the canteen, had her ear to the ground, just sort of eavesdropping here and everywhere. Nothing. Nada. Not a sausage. We have no idea. Apart from Patrick Kilty and the theme tune and the set that you saw in the paper today, we've no idea what else is going to happen tonight. So that makes it good. It's exciting. And there's big talk of what takeaway people are going to get because everyone's sitting in. I see that when Ryan Tuberty took over, over 900,000 people watched his first Late Late Show. And I'm wondering, is that going to be what they're going to do tonight? It's a different world, of course, we live in now. They're telling me, what are you telling me I have here? What? Where is that? I can't see it. No, can't see it anywhere. It's not there. Can't see it. There it is. There it is, yes. This is the first time Patrick Kilty appeared on The Late Late Show. And people might remember that back then he was sort of an up-and-coming comedian. And at the time, nobody had attempted, well, maybe people had attempted in their own homes, but nobody had attempted publicly to do an impersonation of the great Gay Byrne. In fact, people said it was an impossibility. You just can't do it. But Patrick Kilty was bold, he was upcoming, he was an upstart.
I've always wanted to do this, Gay, right? And would you mind, could I maybe sit in your seat a wee second?
Sit in my seat?
Yeah. Can that be all right if I do that? Yeah, is that okay? Yeah, sure. There you go.
I don't like it, but you can sit in my seat.
Because I've always wanted to do this, Gay, right? And so here we go.
So, there you go now. He was a very, very funny young man. The video is called Stir It Up. It was recorded in Belfast. And the good news is that there's one for everybody in the audience.
Yeah, hey, there you go. And of course, other people have done it better, but he was the first, Patrick Kilty on The Late Late Show back in the day with the late Gay Byrne. And he knows, you know from reading all the interviews, that he knows that he has big shoes to fill and he's really looking forward to it. And you can't help but wish him well. Good luck, Patrick Kilty. Now, today on the show, we've a lovely show lined up for you today between now and 4:30. BP Fallon, the legendary BP Fallon, is coming in to talk to us. I really love BP, and you might remember the night that the death of Sinead O'Connor was announced, BP was on the 9 o'clock news with Sharon Ní Bheol on, and he gave a lovely interview, very heartfelt interview about Sinead O'Connor. 51 days on, it's 51 days since then. We decided to get BP back in because there's the commemorative hot press and BP writes in that, and some of his photographs is in it. And we just thought it'd be nice on this Friday afternoon to get him in, talk about Sinead and other things and play some music as well. So we're looking forward to that. Emma Langford is here, the great Emma Langford from Limerick. And she's going to remember Sinead through song and sing one of her own as well. And we've other things to do as well between now and 4:30. And of course, we'll be looking for two of you to take part in our quiz. But first, a little bit of Kylie Minogue. Yes, Kylie Minogue. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. That's 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Good afternoon. That's a great Friday tune. Can't get you out of my head, Kylie Minogue. I see a survey there in the UK about ironing. Yes. 30% of 18 to 34 year olds don't own an iron. They never iron their clothes. And when asked what they did or why they didn't possess an iron, they said that their clothes didn't need ironing. They said it's not important to us. They didn't like doing it. So 30% 18 to 34s, this is a generational thing. By contrast, 90% of those over 45 own an iron and use it regularly. Now, I'd be in that, obviously, category. They were all shocked this morning when I told them that I iron a shirt every day before I come in. I'm not wearing one today because it's Friday, casual day, you know, but usually I would do it. And they couldn't understand why you don't do it in bulk, because I don't particularly like ironing. I have to do it, so I just do one a day. And we were all surprised about Emily. Emily is probably in the 18 to 34 maybe age group. She doesn't own an iron, but she owns a steamer. And seemingly it does a better job and it's a lot quicker and a lot handier than an iron. So I feel a sort of a challenge coming on. Niamh doesn't go near any clothes who look like they need ironing. And I suppose it's part of what we were talking about yesterday. Sort of the waning of formalities. Bring on the informal. Yesterday we were talking about yours sincerely and all of those things that you sign off emails with, and they're on the wane, and shirt and ties on the wane, suits on the wane, iron clothing on the wane. Now they do. I've seen in like places like Marks and Spencers, you get iron free shirts. I've been meaning to try one of those out. I don't believe it. I don't believe that you can actually get something that doesn't need ironing, particularly a shirt. I don't believe that. But anyway, there you go. So it looks like if it keeps going the way it's going, that in, 20, 30 years, ironing will be a thing of the past. Which I suppose a lot of people go, yippee! Good riddance to bad ironing, yeah. Now, we're looking for two of you to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our Who Done It quiz. There'll be two quizzers, you, three questions and a prize. And this week, great prize, two-night stay for two at Photo Island Resort. Breakfast each morning and dinner in the new photo restaurant on an evening of your choice. And there's loads of things to do down there. There's walking trails, swimming pool. There's the spa down there, the Cove restaurant. That's there in the resort. And then around the resort, you have Photo Wildlife Park, Photo House and Gardens. You can pop into Cork City, pop over to Ballymaloe or Ballycotton, Middleton, all there within a short drive. PhotoIsland.ie, PhotoIsland.ie. Here's your qualifying question on this Friday afternoon. What is back on our screens tonight? Is it the Late Late Show or the Early Early Show? What's back on our screens tonight, the Late Late Show or the Early Early Show? 0818715925. 0818715925. Good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray at rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, 51551 for your texts. Did you see this story during the week? It's gone global, from local to global. The so-called cosmic crater on Portmarnock Beach with a meteorite in it. But it turned out to be just a large hole dug with a spade with a rock in it. But if anyone did find a meteorite, it would be a thrilling discovery, and it would go global for all the right reasons. But just how many meteorites have been found in Ireland. Well, lecturer in physics at the Technological University Dublin, Kevin Nolan, is on the line. Hello, Kevin.
How are you doing?
Good to talk to you.
Good.
Yeah, meteorites.
Yes.
Exciting things.
Yeah, I mean, only 8 have ever been found in Ireland since around, 1779.
Right.
So they are rare. Now, they're very common globally. We get thousands landing on Earth every year, but most of them land in the sea, the Antarctic and all the rest of it. So to find one in Ireland is a very rare event.
Okay. Now, the Portmarnock crater, you've seen the pictures.
Yes.
Is that the sort of crater that a meteorite would make on a beach if it were to land?
I mean, the thing is, it's very hard to say.
Yeah.
The one difference, if it was on hard ground, you might see some, you know, radiant material like a typical crater on the moon. But because it was sand and maybe water came in and removed all that detail, you know, the discoverer can be forgiven for thinking it. And I think the smoking gun, per se, was finding, a rock in there.
Yes.
That I think, and if you're an astronomer, you know, I think any amateur astronomer would think, hold on, what's going on here? So fully understand the approach of the astronomer in question.
You'd be blinded by the excitement of it. You know, like if you are an amateur astronomer,
yeah,
and you're reading about these things and talking about, yeah, these things most of your life, and then you happen upon it, it's like, wow, look at this.
Yeah.
This is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're saying only 8 in the last hundreds of years.
Yes. Yeah.
What's the most
now,
recent
one? I should
one?
Say, by the way, our National Museum of Ireland has hundreds of meteorites. It's worth a visit, just to say that. So we do have a lot of them on the island, a lot in our museum, and they're great to see because they're cosmic stones from the
yes,
dawn of time, you know?
Yeah, but how do they have those if we've only 8 recorded since... Go on.
Well, they would have bought them over the years.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the most recent meteorite, where was that?
Actually, only in 1999, actually,
right,
in Leyland's Bridge in Carlow.
Right.
And actually, that was well written up at the time because multiple people saw it. And I think, again, that's the one issue with this one was that nobody saw a fireball. And, you know, I think typically, if anybody was to find a meteorite, then there would have been large numbers of people claiming they saw a fireball in the trajectory and in the direction of where maybe it would have ultimately landed.
And what's the difference between a meteorite and a common or garden rock?
Yeah, well, first of all, they look very self-contained. And as this gentleman said, he thought he saw scorch marks on one side. So because they've burned through the atmosphere at thousands of degrees, you typically see them, you know, molded, welded almost type of thing. They are made of stone and iron and nickels. Many of them are metal, and you'd know that immediately. And I just should say, with my science cap on, many of them have organic materials that are the building blocks of life in them. So
right,
that's why we're so interested in them scientifically. They tell us about the origins of life itself. But the thing is that if it's a stony one, it's very hard to tell from the naked eye whether it's
okay,
a meteorite or just a common or garden rock.
So again, understandable. Again, understandable. You know,
it is understandable. Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
So unless you were subjected to some sort of laboratory examination, you couldn't tell. That's
indeed
fair enough.
And as I said, he saw one side of it all blackened and thought, there's the scorch marks of
yes,
it burning up. So it wasn't just the hole with the stone.
Right.
It actually did tend to look like as if something, you know, burnt up here.
And in fairness to everybody involved, it's gone global because meteorites are, you know, a thing that people are interested in. Go on.
Well, it's very hard to find them.
Yeah.
I mean, as I say, thousands of them land. And if this one is this size, like size several, maybe a kilogram or two in size, that's a significant find,
yeah,
and could be worth quite a lot of money as well if you were to sell it at an auction type of thing. So, yeah, that's what. But I think this has perhaps gone global because of maybe the comedic side to it as well, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. You're speaking there of worth a lot of money. What sort of money are we talking about?
They can sell for, well, thousands or tens of thousands of euro, depending on the size of it and whether
right,
or not the science interest is there. Like, in fact, I was reading up earlier that the British Museum owns one or two of the ones found in Ireland are these pieces of them. So they are highly sought after. And interestingly, different to, when you find...
An artefact.
You get to keep this
if
you find it. So you still have to get it verified professionally, but nevertheless, you get to keep it and maybe auction it then if you want, or auction part of it even, because you can break it off and sell a piece of it.
So is it any wonder, having spoken to you for the last few minutes, that this gentleman was very excited?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
no wonder.
If he'd found this, then this would have been only the ninth one in Ireland.
Yes.
It would have been a nice little historical discovery. And as I say, fairly big contribution to, well, meteorite science and all the rest of it. So, yeah, I mean, very understandable.
Very understandable. Well, yeah. Well, thanks so much, Kevin, for taking time to talk to us today. Kevin Nolan, lecturer in physics at Technological University Dublin. Have a great weekend, Kevin. Good luck. See you. Bye, bye, bye.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we're joined in studio by BP Fallon. Good afternoon, Beep.
Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good. Good to see you.
Very dribbly kind of vibe, isn't it?
Yeah, outside. Yeah, very, yeah. very. Hard to believe, 51 days since we lost Sinead O'Connor. And I was just telling them that I saw you on the news that night with Sharon Viola on very moving, touching tribute to your friend Sinead O'Connor.
Thank you. I'd only just heard, so I was in a fog, you know. That lingers. It doesn't go away, you know.
Isn't it odd when somebody who's beloved and public dies and the public reaction and the grief and the way people call on people like yourself to talk about it and that lasts for a few days and then it's like there's a silence, isn't there? And people then go off and grieve privately.
Well, there's two things that I'd say to that. One is that I was enormously moved by the people who were outside Sinead's house and the people who were watching the coffin go by. Regular, normal people who probably don't go to gigs or possibly don't even buy records. And I think what happened is a lot of people, specifically women, but not only women, of course, realised how much that girl, lady, had meant to them. Whereas before they may not have realised that depth of that grief that happened just nationally.
I think when you see not just her musical achievements, but everything else she stood for and spoke out about, condensed on the news and in packages, you realise, wow, there was a wow factor, wasn't there?
Well, you see, she was very ahead of herself, ahead of all of us, or a lot of us, insofar as she spoke out about certain things that other people wouldn't normally.
Mm.
And she wasn't a politician insofar as manufacturing her responses to things to suit the audience. She said what she thought, for better or worse.
Mm.
And people say, oh, my God, she ruined her career by ripping up the Pope and da-da-da, with a picture of the Pope. She didn't, because she wasn't setting out to be a mega, huge, global pop star. She was a protest singer who became a pop star almost by default.
By accident, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and that tearing up of the picture of the Pope, which was much talked about after her death, and I had to remind myself and our listeners back then that was in 1992. Now, Mary Raftery's documentary, which lifted the lid on sexual child abuse in the Catholic Church, that wasn't broadcast until 1999, 7 years after.
Wow.
So when you say that she was ahead of it, she was. She had read an article in the Irish Independent or something, and it stuck with her and bothered her so much that she was willing to go on American television and rip up a picture of the Pope, which was outlandishly courageous.
Outlandishly courageous.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could argue that it's clumsy, you know. You could say, well, maybe she should have said, you know, I'm disappointed in the Catholic Church because, or something.
Mm.
But she's a very emotional lady, so vroom, tear the picture up. Also, there was a double meaning to the picture. It wasn't just a picture of the Pope. Sinead took it from her mother's house. It was one of maybe two things that she took. And she had this picture with her all the time. And she remembered Bob Geldof tearing up the picture of John Travolta and
Olivia Newton-John.
Olivia. When Rat Trap got to number one.
And it knocked You're the One That I Want off the top of the charts.
Yeah, it had been there for like four years or something, you know.
Yeah.
So that was where the idea was fermented originally. But she was very courageous, Very
so
courageous.
The significance of the picture from the mother's house, and there was the relationship there, the dysfunctional relationship with her mother. So that was part of it as well, not just...
Well, she was always looking for something to do with the photograph.
Right.
Didn't quite know what. The other thing is this, John Lennon taught me this, God bless him. He would say, steal the space, meaning he'd say, it's better for me and Yoko to be giggly in a newspaper talking about acorns than some slimy, dodgy politician. And what a lot of people in the public eye don't do is seize the space in terms of putting forward eloquent, sensible things, even if that's not what everyone else subscribes to, you know.
Is it, 'cause you were friendly with her and you met her, although you don't remember, at a lark in the park.
That's right.
When she was 14, she handed you a demo.
That's right.
And she reminded you of that when you were first memory of meeting her in St. Patrick's Day or around that, 1986. Or
1980, St. Patrick's Day, 1986,
yeah.
No, I didn't remember her giving me the tape, you know.
She didn't care, but she cared a lot? Do you know what I mean?
Like, oh, yeah, yes.
She didn't care what people thought, but she cared a lot about the things she felt strongly about.
She cared a lot.
Yeah.
She cared a lot. And she cared a lot about how people responded. It wasn't like, this is my opinion. I don't care what other people think. She did. That was the whole point of it, you know, trying to make people see something, particularly in a country like Ireland, whereby things were shoveled under the carpet, you know, or put in the cupboard and the key was locked. No, we won't talk about that. You know, it wasn't being addressed, you know.
Yeah. You had a lovely friendship with her and you photographed her a lot. And what put us in mind of you is the Hot Press commemorative edition, Sinead O'Connor, 1966 to 2023.
I must say...
That's your photograph on the back, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's coming back from the Grammys.
Talk to us about the Grammys.
Well, it kind of seems like a bit of a dream in a way. And I'd forgotten that Iggy was there as well.
Iggy Pop.
Yes,
right, yeah.
The great Iggy Pop. And... But the audience is made up of people like Little Richard and Stevie Wonder, Joni Mitchell, Dizzy Gillespie, who was incredible. When he played trumpet, his cheeks came out like a bullfrog. Andy Williams, you know, and so on and so forth. Yeah. So Sinead comes on doing Mandinka, and she's got the Public Enemy logo at the side of her head, you know. And people were looking, and I think what most of them thought to themselves was, this girl is kind of a freak, but God, she's very talented.
Yeah.
In other words, if she'd come on in a pretty, pretty dress and nice hair, they could have digested it. But because she was ahead of the pack, it was a bit of a shock to everybody.
Introduced by Billy Crystal. I have it here.
Do you?
Yeah, so 1989.
Nine.
Right, here we go.
Our first performer is 21 years old, comes from Ireland, and with her very first album, The Lion and the Cobra, she has served notice that this is no ordinary talent. Ladies and gentlemen, please meet Sinead O'Connor.
I'm dancing seven bells. Want you to pick up my style.
She won the Grammy.
Well, actually, she didn't.
She didn't win the Grammy.
Normally I don't correct people.
No, but the lady said that on the news. That's Sharon Niveaulan said she'd
yes,
won it.
She did.
Yeah.
Actually, the award...
Who won it that year?
...went to the famous record, Tina Turner Live in Europe, which no one had heard of then and no one has heard of now. But they gave the old warhorse an award.
And Billy Crystal said, no ordinary talent.
Right.
And I was just reading a piece you wrote way back. Till then, some people are stars. Other people are simply famous or successful or hardworking or talented or skilled. Prince is a star. Phil Collins is not. Sinead O'Connor is a star. That's it.
Yeah. Well, that's the truth of the matter. You know, one doesn't want to get into some sort of codology hierarchical game. But if one was as foolish to do so, this was more than just an important artist. This was a truth-sayer, you know. And I genuinely believe that she's up there with people like Bob Dylan and Leonard Cohen. No question. No question. And as time rolls by its many splendid carpet and unfolds, it'll become even more obvious, you know. The thing is, she would rail against being put up onto some sort of sainty
pedestal.
Image. Yeah, yeah, that wasn't her vibe at all.
Yeah,
you know. I mean, one of the great things about Sinead is she would talk to anyone, you know, and didn't believe in all of that sort of
hierarchy thing.
No,
yeah, yeah.
No.
Why do you think you and her developed a strong friendship?
Because we were both eccentric, I suppose. We both loved music. We both loved having fun. I remember my mother, bless her, saying to me one time, Bernard, life isn't all a holiday. And not with any discourteousness or anything, I said, why not? And basically, I don't see why it can't be if you're lucky.
Yeah.
And more or less, that's what I've done. You know, I have no credentials at all apart from my mouth and my brain.
But you're the real deal, BP. I'm not blowing smoke up here, but you are the real deal. That's the thing, you know. Like all of these people, you know, decided that they would hang out with you and let you hang out with them. And they could see that you were the real deal as well. I suppose...
Thank you.
Sinead, life was no holiday for Sinead.
No, it wasn't.
No.
But you see, what I don't think the focus should specifically be on the struggles and the pain, which, in a miraculous way, she transmogrified into music that not only was entertaining but healing, you know. And there's something else I was going to say. What did you say just before that?
Will I play a bit of music and then you can gather your thoughts.
Do you?
So this is from...
Daddy, I'm fine.
The line, and well, I'll play that in a moment, but I just wanted... So the line in the cobra was mentioned there, and this is Troy from that album, just a little bit
of... Amazing record.
I will rise. Now we'll return. The phoenix from the flame.
That's it, exactly what you were saying. It's pure,
amazing.
Raw emotion, yeah. Channeled into the
music. I mean, what
you
did there, I know you have to do it time-wise, but in the kind of way, it's like cutting 3 inches off the Mona Lisa to make it fit on your wall.
I do apologise.
That's all right.
No, but I would love
forgiven.
To talk to you for a few hours and play all the songs in their totality. But, you know, you've worked in radio before, you know.
Of course, I'm only whining.
Yeah, no, but you're fine. I'll take that. And you, Daddy, I'm Fine, is the one that you choose. And again, we've just, it's a clip.
I chose it because it's another side of Sinead that other people mightn't be aware of.
Give us the background to it.
Dave Stewart.
Eurythmics.
Yeah, I was there in the studio, in Church Studios in London, when he was saying, write something like that's part of your character, you know. Other ones, he said, write your story. But on this one, write something that's part of your character that people aren't really aware of. And this is The Hot Girl on the Prowl.
Right. So that was unadulterated rock and roll, was it?
That's funky, you know.
Yeah,
rocking.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned already that she had Public Enemy tattooed into her, cut into her hair when
she
performed.
We used to drive, right, it sounds silly, but a lot of silliness went on. Enjoyable. We used to drive round and round, when you could, drive round and round St. Stephen's Green with NWA, with Bleak the Police playing loud. Yes. Let's go around one more time, singing along. Not anti-police or anything. It's just the great Sonic, you know.
Yes,
we didn't think we were back in Compton in L.A. We were just having a laugh.
Yeah, and of course, stretched across your grave is there's a hip hop beat in that.
There's a wonderful version. There's a mix as well, which is really nice.
The Brighton thing, I think I've heard that.
I forget the name of it, but Steve Wickham, who's a dear friend, is an incredible fiddle player. And the backing of that record is melded with Steve's fiddle and also James Brown's funky drummer. And as far as I remember, Sinead didn't get permission to use funky drummer, so they sued her and got 50 grand or something ridiculous, which I'm sure Clive Stubblefield, who played the drum, probably didn't get. But anyway, music.
Yeah. That's Steve Wickham.
Steve Wickham on the fiddle.
Right.
He's on my next album, he said, unashamedly plugging it.
Yeah.
Very honoured to have him on it.
You've been working away at it for a few years now.
Yeah, because it's not like, to be frank, it's not like there's 50 million people knocking on the door for the record. So that allows me to do it at my own pace.
Yeah.
You know, kind of a lot of people do that. Like the Stones, you know, so this is our new album, but they've been making it for years.
Yes,
you know.
Yeah. Well, you'll come back into us when it's released.
Oh, I'd love to.
Yeah, well, I'd love to have you.
I'd love to.
And you're one of the few people in the world that have heard Sinead's recorded but unreleased album with David Holmes.
I guess I am.
Yeah.
It's a fabulous record. It's really great. And it's just nice to think that there's more music to come out. And it's not bottom of the drawer stuff. David Holmes is enormously talented man, as well as being a sweetheart, you know. We made a record together, Henry McCulloch, which came out at Record Store Day a few years ago and was a hit in Record Store Day. And he's a joy.
Mm.
And the pairing of him and Sinead is...
How would you describe it to us?
Well, someone else asked me that, I'd say Sinead music, you know.
but
what it is, it's some really strong songs produced by David Holmes, who's... You know, he's done Ocean's 11, 12, 13, or produced Noel Gallagher, Primal Scream. You know, he's a hip chap. He did a tribute to Sinead, which is nearly 2 hours long. It's somewhere gettable on the web, and it's really fantastic.
I listened to a bit of it at lunchtime.
Did you?
Yeah.
It's very moving, isn't
God's
it?
God's Waiting Room.
Yes.
You put in God's Waiting Room and Sinead O'Connor tribute. He starts off with one of her songs, I think, for Mother Universe.
A cappella.
Yeah, a cappella, yeah. And she was, that's when she shone, didn't she? You knew that she, what she could do. And this always gets me, a cappella again.
Thank you for hearing me. Thank you for hearing me.
I know there's a drone behind us, not exactly a cappella, but
still,
it's beautiful, isn't it?
That voice, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it wasn't like she was 3 years old and be taken to the singing teacher. She didn't even think of singing till she was 15, when she sang at a wedding, you know. I was lucky enough the other day to meet the nun who was very important in getting Sinead a guitar and so on and so forth. And it was wonderful to hear the story from her point of view, you know.
Yeah.
And that nun changed the course of pop culture in a way.
But she did.
Because the thing about Sinead, it's not just musical, of course, it's social. And the way she looked, which allowed a lot of people, women, but also men, to feel loose about how they presented themselves. And they didn't have to go for any particular thing if they didn't want, you know.
Yeah.
Because years ago what used to happen... Young people, it's a horrible expression, really. No, it's not, but it's odd.
No, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
Young people, I've forgotten my dress.
No, they'd feel that they had to conform in a certain
way. Oh, yes. Young people used to wear the same clothes as their parents.
Yes.
There wasn't a youth market.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't exist. And then, you know, 60s happened and so on and so forth. or even before that, Teddy Boys, you know, which was the plebs wearing the uniform of the nobility.
Yeah.
You know, it was a sort of...
Behind you there is Emma Langford, BP.
Yes. Hello, Emma.
And Karen.
Hi.
Hello, Karen.
And you never met Sinead.
No, but, I wish I had.
But in a way, she sort of opened doors for you, is that too?
Like, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she's been someone I've cited as an influence and inspiration for a long time musically. When I started getting my hair cut very short, I would go to Niall, my hairdresser, and be like, can I please go full Sinead this time? Can I please go full Sinead this time? She's such a presence.
Yeah.
I think for a lot of women in music, she's a presence in our lives, for a lot of people in music generally, but yeah.
And I read, it could have been you that said it, but somebody said it in this lovely commemorative Hot Press thing.
I think that Hot Press thing is very good.
It actually is very good. There's Bob Geldof, there's John Reynolds, who was there from the start.
Yeah, John Reynolds' piece is great.
And there's interviews with her when she was, her first interview with the Hot Press is there, and your description of that gig and awards ceremony in Belfast.
There's a piece also that I wrote 7 months before The Lion and the Cobra came out.
Yeah.
The thing you quoted from about her being a star.
It's her, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Emma's going to sing a Sinead song.
Groovy.
Yeah. Difficult to choose, was it?
Yeah, it was difficult to choose. And also, it's always really hard to sing, to pay any kind of tribute to a singer like Sinead. There's always going to be, myself and Karen are part of the Irish Women in Harmony group, and we went on stage and sang a medley of Sinead's songs. And
at Electric Picnic.
At Electric Picnic, on the main stage, which was amazing. And the response was huge and so positive. But you're always going to have people saying, you know, you can't sing like her. Nobody can. And, you know, you shouldn't try to.
No.
All you can do is try and live your life a bit more like Sinead.
Yes,
you
know? Of course, she was a songwriter as well. That's the thing.
So absolutely.
In a way, you're honouring her songwriting.
Look, if you can interpret the songs and put your heart into them, that's the best you can kind of do.
Cool.
That's a lovely tribute. Lovely tribute. You're going to stay with us, right? And you're going to sing us out, and I'm going to talk to you about your tour and all that.
Yes.
We're going to Noakt. I have to say goodbye to BP Fallon. BP, when the album's out, will you come in and talk to us?
I'm ready, Teddy. I'd love to.
And Sinead was a great hugger. Just be final words.
She was a great hugger, so I'll give you a hug before I go there.
Great. Looking forward.
Everyone can see on the radio.
Yeah. BP Fallon, thank you so much.
You're more than welcome. Thank you. God bless.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Grandma, good morning, Breed. Have a good weekend. Thank you very much. 51551 RayRT.ie. Beautiful, really gorgeous. Well done, Emma. And co, Sinead will be smiling. That's nice, isn't it? Now, we've two quizzers standing by, ready to take part in our Who Done It quiz. Yeah, prize this week is a two-night break for two people in Fota Island Resort. Thanks to everybody down there. Loads of things to do. Walking trails, there's swimming pool, there's the spa, the Cove restaurant. There's golf down there as well. And then in the environs of Fota Island Resort, you have Fota Wildlife Park, Fota House and Gardens, world-class English market in Cork City, and loads to do in Cork City, Ballymaloe, Ballycotton, Middleton, loads of things to do. FotaIsland.ie. Hello, Louise.
Hi, Ray.
How are you? Louise Jones is in County Leash.
Yeah, I'm really good, Ray.
Good.
Really good. Apart from the rain, but all's good.
Miserable.
All's good.
Is it 24 hours? Has it been raining for 24 hours? I think it has.
I'd say, yeah, more or less.
Yes.
Yeah.
I suppose looking around the world.
I brought my son to hurling last night and they had to have it in the hall because the pitch was so wet.
Right.
And that was 6 o'clock.
Yes, yes.
And I don't think it stopped since then.
Where exactly in Leash are you?
In Port Arlington.
Ah, yes, Port Arlington.
Right in the middle, right on the main street.
And Port Arlington is close enough to the border with Kildare, isn't it? If my memory serves me correctly.
Shamanis Drevin's only up the road couple of miles.
Yeah. I played rugby in Port Arlington many the time.
Very good.
Yeah, we used to change in a dressing room with no roof. It's probably, things have improved probably since then.
I'm not too sure. We're not a big rugby house. We're only starting off with the GAA now.
Oh, yeah, right.
Tennis and other bits and pieces, but we haven't got near the rugby yet.
Yeah. So hurling last night. So who's in the house with you?
So Evie at the moment. Yeah. Evie's 5 and just finished school for the week, so she's delighted with herself.
Yeah.
And Neil, my husband. So Neil's working upstairs, so he's listening in too.
Uh-huh.
And then we've Joel. And Joel's gone to his friend Harley's house.
Great. And everyone's happy because it's Friday.
Everyone's happy.
Will you be watching The Late Late tonight?
Oh, gosh, you will.
Yeah.
I love this time of the year, Ray. All the kind of good autumn telly comes on.
Yes.
And you can light the fire and settle in. It's nice.
You can start wearing your boots again.
Absolutely.
I'm a boot man, you see. I love boots. And during the summer, I always feel a little bit odd wearing them. But then.
Yeah, I like the old boots and jeans myself.
Yes, yeah, yeah. There you go.
And the cosy jumpers.
That's it.
Yeah, it's nice. Actually, Ray, can I just... Sorry, completely off the subject, but my sister was in Malahide train station the other day and she met Marty Whelan.
Right.
And Marty Whelan gave my mammy a big shout out on the radio. So I'm just wondering, can you do the same?
I can, of course, yeah. When you can do it, I can do it. We can do it together.
if you just said hello to Eileen Jones, she'd be delighted.
Right. Hello, Eileen Jones.
Now.
Wherever you are. Where is she?
She's out in Garry Hinch, so it's only like 4 miles out the road.
Right, okay, so you didn't move too far away from the homestead.
So that's two...
Yes, wow.
Two big shout-outs she's had in 1 week.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, I'll get on to Paddy Kilty now and see if he'll say hello to her on the Late Late Show tonight.
Thanks, Ray.
You're up against Patrick Conboy, who's in Kildare, not too far away. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, Ray, how are you keeping?
And it is Patrick or Paddy or Pat or...
You can call me both, but as said, go by both. But,
go by both, right.
Yeah.
So. Where are you in Kildare?
In Kilcock, right.
Right.
So just here in Kilcock.
Yeah, the other side of the county. Kilcock is nearly in Dublin.
Well, just on the border between Dublin and Meath. So.
Yes, yeah. And what are you up to today?
So last day of my holidays, right, so just making the most of it. Just got back from Malta there yesterday with my wife, Emma. Unfortunately, we didn't bring the weather with us.
No.
Sad to say, but
Malta like? I've never been to Malta.
It's a beautiful country, Ray, really. Great food, lovely people, loads of sun. You really couldn't ask for more. We took in a good few of the islands at the north end of Malta, Gozo and Camino, while we were there. Really, I would definitely go back again and would recommend if anyone is looking into booking their holidays for next year to consider Malta. There was just a lot to do and lots of history. So
are you on one of those deals? You know, if you get a friend, if you recommend it to a friend, that you get a discount the next time. Is that
no? And there's no connections to Malta. No connections there. But no, really, really did really enjoy it, Ray. So back to reality and back to work on Monday. So
right, I see it's 29 degrees in Malta right now. Just so that's what you're missing, Patrick. That's what you're missing.
Well, I got a good bit of a colour there right now. I don't know, it's on the crimson side. I thought it'd be more bronze, but it's on the, despite the factor 50, 30 and everything in between going on. But got a great colour.
Good.
Now, great to be back.
The Late Late Show tonight. Who would you like to see on the first Late Late Show? We still don't know. Who the guests are going to be?
I suppose it's keeping us all in suspense. But if as I was saying to your researcher, my dream dinner guests, and if I had people to interview, it would be Brian Cox, Dame Judi Dench, and Robbie Williams as well.
Right.
I think they're, given their collective kind of personalities and I suppose their life experiences, I would love to see
and
them.
And it's Brian Cox, the actor or the physicist?
Oh, the actor from Succession.
Yes.
We're before the watershed race. I won't even go and repeat his catch. His
yes, no, yeah. People know it. Anybody who's watched Succession. That's a good.
Exactly.
That's a good trio there. Brian Cox, Judi Dench, and Robbie Williams. Okay, now Louise and Patrick, we better get to the quiz. They're telling me hurry up there. So three questions. I give you the category. Then I ask if you want a clue. If you go for a clue and get it right, you get a point. If you go without a clue, it's more difficult. So you get 2 points for that. Whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. And if it's drawing points, we go to a tie-break question. Good luck to you both, Louise Jones in Port Darlington, Patrick Conboy in Kilcock. Here we go.
Good luck, Patrick.
Good luck, Louise.
Okay, Louise. Pop superstars. Pop superstars is our first category. Do you want a clue or not?
No, thanks, Ray.
No clue. Can you name this pop superstar for 2 points? Money. Who's that?
Oh, gosh.
A guess.
It's not Bruno Mars, is it?
No.
No.
You're going to kick yourself.
I know I am.
Harry Styles.
Ah, oh, for God's sake.
Yes, exactly. Adore You. That's the name of the song.
Oh.
Okay.
I'm at the door myself right now, I can tell you.
Early days. Back to you or over to you, Patrick. So it's pop superstars. What do you want to do?
No clue. Let's
no
go
clue
for
two. Name this pop superstar. Who's that?
Meghan Trainor.
No, you're going to be kicking yourself. Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift. Cruel Summer.
Yeah.
And actually, while you're away on holidays, USA Today announced that they're hiring a reporter specifically to cover Taylor Swift stories. That's how big she is. Okay.
Wow.
Even start. No scores on the board. Question number two, category number two, TV theme tunes. TV theme tunes. How are you on those, Louise? What do you think?
I'll tell you in a minute.
But do you want a clue?
Do I want a clue? No, I don't.
No. Okay, for two. Can you name the TV show that this is the theme tune for?
Yeah.
All together now. Well,
it's Murder, She Wrote.
Yes, it's a sort of a jaunty tune. Belies the fact that somebody's going to get murdered after you hear it. But anyway, 2 points for you.
They're making a film, you know. They're going to make a film out of Murder, She Wrote.
Yes, heard that during the week as well.
Yep.
Yes. I don't know if it'd be the same without Angela Lansbury, but anyway,
no,
there you
I
go.
No, I don't think so either. Yeah.
2 points for you. Good stuff. You're on the scoreboard, cool. Patrick. TV theme tunes. What's it going to be?
No clue. Yeah,
okay.
Let's roll for it, Ray. Yeah.
Okay, for 2 points, name the TV show that has this as its theme.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down the road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant. And if you threw a party, invited everyone.
What do you think?
Oh, Ray, you have me there.
No.
Golden Girls?
Yes, Golden Girls is correct. Well done.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it was a guess. They all count. Okay, it's 2-2. Down to the wire. Louise and Patrick. Funny Irish people is the final category. Louise, what are you going to do?
I'll go with the full clip. I don't need a clue.
You don't need a clue. Okay. Who is this funny Irish person for 2 points?
Oh, God, Ted. Maybe you're right. If we don't get out, we might have to eat each other. You know, like in that film Alive, where they get into the plane crash and then they have to eat all their friends. Mm, look, here's me eating Tony. Yum, 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 yum. Here's Tony's parents. When they hear that I've eaten Tony...
Very funny. Who's that?
Oh, that's Graham Norton.
It is, as Father Noel Furlong.
Yeah, my favourite Father Ted character.
Yeah, amazing, yeah. And then doing the river dance in the caravan. 2 points for you. Well done. You're on
Thank
4.
You,
you can't do any more. Patrick, you're on 2. If you get this right, it brings us to a tie-break situation. I'm assuming that you're going to go without a clue.
Going without a clue, right.
Okay. Which funny Irish person is this for 2 points to bring us to a tie-break situation?
And it was very interesting the things people would say to me once they realised I was single. People would say, oh, heard your back on the market. Say that here? Yeah, heard your back on the market. Yeah, heard your back on the market. Back on the market. Back on the market. I grew up in an agricultural farming background. No good cow ever goes back onto the market. What a thing to say.
Who's that?
Oh, Deirdre O'Kane?
No. She's a fellow Kildare woman as well, Patrick.
Can't, you know, that had me there, right?
She's from outside Kildare town, Aisling B. Aisling B. That's who it is. Sorry about that, Patrick. Listen, we're going to send you out a Ray D'Arcy Show Keep Cup. Enjoy the rest of your holidays and good luck going back to the workplace and all that.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Patrick. Have a good weekend.
Enjoy
See you. Bye.
You too.
Bye.
Thanks, Patrick.
Louise, well done.
Woohoo!
There you go.
I'm delighted, Ray. Thanks so much.
You're off to photoisland.ie. You and a person of your choice.
Oh, I can't wait.
Loads
of
things.
My kids actually only said recently, they were looking at it in a newspaper and they said they'd love to go.
Well, there you go. There you go. They manifested.
Delighted.
They manifested it. Not that I believe any of that BS. But anyway, there you go. Okay, well done, Louise. Congratulations.
Ray,
see you. Bye.
Million.
Bye.
Have a great
weekend. See you. Bye.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, it's a big weekend for our next guest, probably facing the biggest challenge of his career. Aidan Green is a comedian. And he's appearing, supporting Garrod Farrelly in Vicar Street this week. And I don't know if you might have heard Aidan on with Brendan O'Connor last year. Aidan, you've a stammer.
Yes, I do.
And you would think that the last profession you would choose with a stammer is...
Standard. Yes, it's kind of like a fish becoming an electrician.
Yes.
You know, like it's adorable, but it's a health and safety nightmare.
And... was it like, how did you come up with that idea, or was it facing your worst fear? Is that it?
No, it was actually because around the time I was, I'd say 20, I had a lot of people saying I couldn't be a stand-up comedian. You know, it was like something I'd passively thought about. But because people kept on saying that because I had a stammer, I couldn't be a stand-up comedian. I was just like, well, I mean, now obviously I have to prove them all wrong. Just like pure begrudgery is the only reason I'm a comedian.
So it's an act of defiance.
Exactly, exactly.
I love that. I love that because I'm a defiant person. If somebody tells me I can't do something, I, you know.
Oh, of course.
Yes, yeah. So at the beginning, I suppose, when you're a child, having a stammer is no crack at all.
No. Well, it wasn't too bad before I was like 12 years old because, you know, like I'm from Cavan and everyone in Cavan has a speech impediment. So it's, you know, it was very hard to be diagnosed because I went into a speech therapist and she said, gee, she sounds lovely to me, so it does. But it was, I mean, up until I was like maybe 12 or 13, I didn't even really know I had a stammer. It was like very innocuous. And then when I was 13, it just one day changed completely and I couldn't talk at all. And so like after that, it was incredibly hard. But yeah. I mean, it made for very good material. So I guess it was worth it.
Yeah. Like we've spoken to people with stammers before. Joe Biden famously has a stammer.
Yep.
And there are methods of treatment that seem to work for some people.
Yeah.
And have you decided not to go that way?
Oh, I've tried all of them.
Oh, you've tried all of them.
Oh, if there's anything that was available in the Cavan, Monaghan, Leitrim, Longford area, I was brought. You know, I got the Catholic cure for stammer.
Right.
I went to a woman for my inner ear balance because they thought that might be the problem. I was under. I got some hypnosis. I think a lot of these things which people think are cures is just people naturally growing out of their stammers.
Okay. And on a serious note, what is the origin of it? Do they know?
No. I mean, it's just, 1%. Well, it's 25% of everyone will have some form of a speech impediment by the age of 4. And then 20% of those will have it for 6 months or longer, and 25% of those will have it for the rest of their lives. And I just happen to be a part of that very lucky 1%, which is not the 1% I wanted to be a part of.
Yeah. And is it exacerbated by stress?
For me personally, a lot of physical things do affect it. If I'm tired, if I'm, you know, like if I have a sore back, things like that do affect my stammer more. But... you know, I think there's a kind of a misconception, you know, like a lot of people, if I'm stammering, will say, oh, just relax, which nothing makes you less relaxed than being told to relax. But I mean, you know, like I think it's just, you know, like because stammering is both physical and mental. So it starts off with the physical and it starts a cycle then where it just feeds in on itself. So oh, the more you stammer, the more fear you build up. And then that causes you to stammer even more. So, you know, like it's just, for me, I've always said the best thing for your stammer is to not care if you stammer. So that way you're taking out a part of that of that cycle, basically.
Yeah. So you've just returned from Edinburgh.
Yes.
So you're doing your own show. What's the name of the show?
I can't believe it's not. I can't believe it's not. Stutter. And that's the entire show is me just trying to say it. And normally it takes me about an hour, but you guys just got a preview.
Edited highlights.
Yes, exactly.
So Vicar Street is you know, it's the mecca of Irish comedy, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah. It's the place I first saw stand-up. I saw Tommy Tiernan there when I was 15, but it's also the first place where I thought I could be a stand-up comedian, because I saw Simon Amstell there when I was 18, and I'd never seen somebody be so personal on stage, and somebody like not necessarily maybe aren't things really good crack, but still making it funny. And it was the first time I saw a form of stand-up I could do. So it's just, I mean, it's a place all of us have seen shows. It's basically the end goal for basically every comedian in Ireland. So
I'm in awe of you. I actually am. So good luck. Cheers. This weekend. Stay with us. That was lovely.
Thank you.
Emma Langford and emmalangfordmusic.com to find out where Emma is appearing. And that was Karen on piano. Thanks very much, Karen. And Aidan Green, good luck over the weekend in Vicar Street. That's it from us. Sarah and Cormac are on Drive Time. We are back on Monday. Enjoy your weekend. Have a good one.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.